just to introduce what we're going to be doing, it's not really appropriate to have a public shiur on the night of Tisha B'Av. So the way we've done it in the past, at least a couple of years ago, and the way we're going to do it tonight is this is not a shiur. I think it's appropriate to spend the night of Tisha B'Av learning through the Churban, learning through the Agaritas about the Churban and Maseches Gittin. So I'm going to be learning about the Churban, and I'll be learning out loud, and everyone is welcome to listen in. Because it's not a shiur, and because it's just private learning, feel free at any time to leave. It's not like leaving in the middle of a shiur, it's more like leaving a Beis Medrash and just leaving someone there learning. That's socially acceptable. Even if you're the last one, feel free to leave. I won't even notice. I can't even see you. So we're going to pick up in the Gemara in Maseches Gittin on Daf Nun Hei Amud Beis. The Gemara on the bottom of Nun Hei Amud Beis at the two dots is the beginning of the Churban Agarita, and it stretches all the way to the bottom of Nun Ches Amud Aleph. So again, I don't know how far I'm going to get, but we'll get started. The two dots is about four lines into the wide line. So the Gemara tells us, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mai duchsiv ashrei adam mefachei tamid umaksha libo yipol bera'a. What does the pasuk mean when it says that fortunate is one who is constantly afraid, constantly terrified, and someone who hardens his heart is going to fall into bad? So the Gemara tells us there are three stories that this pasuk refers to. Akamtza ubar kamtza chav Yerushalayim. Because of the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, Yerushalayim was destroyed. Atarnagol v'tarnagolasa, Charav Tor Malka. Because of a hen and a rooster, the city of Tor Malka, or the mountain area of Tor Malka, was destroyed. Asaka derispak, Charav Beitar. And because of the side of a carriage, of a woman's carriage, that wagon, Beitar was destroyed. So the Gemara is going to go through one story at a time. A Kamtza Bar Kamtza Charav Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was destroyed on account of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. What's the story? Dahu Gavra Derachme Kamtza Ubal Devave Bar Kamtza. There was a fellow who had a good friend Kamtza, but there was someone he really didn't like, someone he fought with all the time, whose name was Bar Kamtza. Ovid Sudas, and he made a Sudas. So right away at the beginning of the story, we see where the trouble is going to come. People who have enemies typically, as much as they try to stick with their friends, if you have enemies in this world, they come back to haunt you. A lot of times people think when they're younger, they can make their enemies and make their friends, and as long as they stay away from their enemies, they'll be okay. It doesn't work that way. The Jewish world is small enough. Someone has enemies in the Jewish world, it's always going to come back to haunt you. So, Amr Le L'Shameh, so he was making a Suda, and he said to the Shamash, Zil Aisi Li Kamtza. He said, I want you to invite Kamtza, because he's my friend. The Shamash went and instead invited Bar Kamtza. So we know where this story is going to go, when the major kasha that all the Achronim ask is, what did Kamtza do wrong? The Gemara says that why was Yerushalayim destroyed? If you ask most people what happened, what the major story is over here, they'll say, oh, it's the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Then you ask them, yeah, who is who? Which guy was the one who caused all the trouble, and which one was the one who just was supposed to be invited? Most people wouldn't know, probably. They wouldn't know which one was Kamtza, which one was Bar Kamtza. And yet, the Gemara seems to blame Kamtza as much as it blames Bar Kamtza. It's Kamtza, Bar Kamtza, Charav Yerushalayim. Well, l'chora, Kamtza did nothing wrong. Kamtza just didn't end up getting invited, presumably. He did absolutely nothing wrong. So, we pointed out in the past that the idea might be that sometimes friends play a very critical role in the way we interact with our enemies. Because if a person has enemies, a person has people that he doesn't like, a person has people he looks down upon, he speaks badly about, so it's very difficult for a person to go on with his life if that's the way he looks at everybody. And if he doesn't have any support in the way that he talks about people, in the way that he looks at people. So typically what he'll do is he'll call his friends for support. He'll call his friends and he'll speak to them. They'll yes him, and they'll tell him, yeah, you're so right. You're so right about that. Yeah, that person's really terrible. And that's what gives the ability for hatred to grow, because the person seeks support from his friends and he gets the support from his friends. So maybe Kamtza played that important role. So Asa Ashkei Davi Yosef. So the guy comes to the meal and he sees that there's Bar Kamsa, his enemy. Amalei Michtia, who gavra baldavavada, who gavra hava? Who? My bodis hachle. He says, I don't understand. We're enemies. What are you doing over here? Come puk, get out of here. Amalei, hol vasoyi shafkan. He says, I understand we're enemies. I thought you were extending an olive branch. I thought you were maybe reaching out to me. Once I'm here, leave me alone. You know, just let me stay here. Ve'yihivnalach demei mada achilna v'shasina. And I'll even pay you. I'll pay you for whatever it is that I might eat or that I might drink. You know, I'll reimburse you for whatever I cost you at the meal, and I'm not going to cost you that much. I'll reimburse you for whatever I cost you. Amar Leilo, the guy said, no, you're ruining my whole party. Just seeing your face is very upsetting to me. Amar Leilo, Yehivnalach demei palga desuda sayach. He says, okay, so I'll up the offer. I'll split the party with you. Everyone wishes that a mechutin like that. I'll split everything. I'll split the party 100% with you. Amar Leilo said, no, not interested. I want you out of here. No amount of money. Amar Leilo, Yehivnalach demei kula suda sayach. I'll pay for the whole party. It's not even my party. It's your party. I'll pay for the whole thing. So again, Amar Leilo said, not interested. Nakte biyade v'ukme v'afke. So he physically picked him up and threw him out of the party. Amar, so this Bar Kamtza, who was just thrown out of the party, said, hol vaviyasvi rabbanan v'lo machube, shma mina kanichaluhu. That if the rabbanan could stand idly by and not make a macha and not say anything about this, it must be that they're perfectly okay with this, that they have no problem with what was just done to me. That a lot of times, shtika is kohoda. A lot of times people have the attitude that, you know, I'll just lay low, I don't want to get involved, why should I get involved, I'll just stay out of it. My children were just asking me, if you were there, what would you have done? You probably would have done everything that they said to me correctly. You would have done exactly what the rabbis did. You would have done nothing. You never want to pick a fight. You always, would have taken it easy. You would have said, why should I get involved? It's their fight. It's their business. But when you see a terrible injustice, when you see something that's blatantly wrong, that's clearly wrong, and you're in a position of authority, and you're in a position where people would listen to you, or people potentially might listen to you, we have a mitzvah in the Torah, that you have to try to help people see the right way and help guide them in the right way. And they did it. The Rabbanan just sat there, because why should they get involved? It's not their fight. So Bar Kamtza assumed it must be that the rabbis must have an in for him also. So Ezel Echelbu Kurtza Bemalcha. So he said, I'm going to go and I'm going to plant a seed in the by the king to tell him about what the Jews are up to. So right away he goes and he's malshin to the Kesar. He tells the king, the Jews are rebelling against you. In a lot of these stories throughout the Sagadata, as soon as someone gets insulted, they right away go and they report, Mardubach Yudai. And usually it's a Jew that's doing the reporting. It's almost like a Tamus Nafshi Yim Plishtim type of attitude. How's it going to turn out for Bar Kamtza? What does he think? If anti-Semitism is on the rise, and if the king decides he's going to carry out a Holocaust, Bar Kamtza is going to be spared? He's not going to be spared either. But Mardubach Yudai, it's worth it for him to get back at the people that he's angry at. He's not thinking constructively now. He's thinking about getting his revenge, and that's what he does. And it's also notable that almost every time that they come and they say Mardubach Yudai, the king doesn't ask any, he asks some questions, but it's not hard for him to believe. The king is always willing, more than willing to believe, whatever Lashon Hara you tell him about the Jews. People don't have to check, they'll read anybody's Twitter feed about what the Jews are doing, and they'll just believe it. Fact-checking, reporters don't fact-check, no one has to check to make sure things are actually true. Doesn't matter who the source is. Amar lei mi yemar. So he said, this king was pretty good. He said, who said the Jews are rebelling against me? Amar lei shadlu korbana, chazizi mikrovan lei. He says, well, why don't you do an experiment? Send a korban and see if they bring the korban. So azul shadu biyadei eglatil, so bahadi dukasi shadu beimuma benifs vasayim. So he sent a eglatil. So eglatil is machlokes rishonim, what it means, I think, whether it's a calf that's the third born to its mother, which is usually assumed to be the best one. I guess parents make mistakes on the first couple of children, they get it right by the third one. That's not what it means. But the third child, third born calf is the choicest meat, or it means 3 years old. Machlok is exactly what an egla tilsa is, an egla mishuleshes. The idea of sending an egel is also interesting, that the egel plays a role over here, and dafka an egel mishuleshes plays a role over here. The egel, of course, is the greatest black eye in our history, that every time Jews are punished, the Gemara tells us, every time Jews are punished, there's a little bit of the avona egel that we're still getting punished for. There's a little bit of that we're still paying the price for, the avona egel. And the egel didn't happen once, it happened three, there were three egel hazahavs. There's the famous one in Chumash, but if anyone learns Navi, Yeravam set up two more egel hazavs, which is the most of all the startling things in Navi, that's got to be one of the most startling. That you hear a person says, I wonder what a good way to have an alternate form of worship would be. You know, what's really going to work? And he decides, egel hazav, what a brilliant idea, like as if it wasn't thought of before. How did it turn out the first time? But there are three egel hazav, so maybe that's what igla tilta relates to. So Bar Kamta apparently was chosen as the delivery man, and he puts a mum benivs vasayim on the lip of the animal. There's meaning in that also, on the lip of the animal, because the lip represents, presumably, sins of the mouth, lashon hara and the like, that people sin with their mouths. And some say no. He made the mum in the eye of the animal, and that also represents sins of the eye, that people look askance at other people. All of this is sinas chinam related. So it makes sense that these are the mumim. These are the problems that Klal Yisrael has. Sinas chinam is rooted in the way we look at other people and the way we speak about other people. That's what feeds it. That's what fuels the flames of sinas chinam, and that's how we practice it. By looking askance at other people and by speaking about them. So why specifically these two places? Though the Gemara says, "Dukta d'lididon have a mum u'liditu lav mumahu," because that's a place where it's a mum in our lexicon that would be considered a mum in our halachic system. That's a mum, but for the Goyim they would never consider such a thing a mum. Why would the Goyim never consider such a thing a mum? So the Maral has this idea that there's guf and chomer and there's tsura. Guf is, you know, the physical being, the ability of any physical thing to just, you know, maximize its physical potential, and then the tsura is something that's a little more ruchni, that's a little more beyond that. So the Goyim have the concept of the guf, the chomer, whereas Jews are recognize the value of tsura as well. The animal could work just as well in the field with a mum on its lip, without a mum on its lip. It doesn't change one bit the way the animal is going to work. It doesn't change the way the meat's going to taste if you shech the animal. It doesn't change anything about the actual chomer of the animal. The animal with the eye also, it doesn't change anything. But the lip, the mouth, and the eye are two ways of interacting with the world outside of our bodies. And that's that maybe relates a little more to the concept of tzura. So they don't consider it a mum, and we do consider it a mum. Savar Rabbanan l'kruvei mishum shalom malchus. The Rabbanan said, "Uh-oh, we have a problem here. The king sent this animal, but we should be makrivit, and it has a mum, but we should be makrivit anyway because of shalom malchus." So Amar luhu Rabbi Zechari ben Avkulas. Rabbi Zechari ben Avkulas says, "No, yomru bali mum and kraven l'gabei mizbeach." If we do that, people are going to think that a balmum can be brought on the mizbeach. So it's interesting. He doesn't say that it's asr to be makrav a balmum, because it wasn't asr. It was takamutr. Rav Elchanan points out it was takamutr to be makrav a balmum in this case because it was pikoach nefesh. Pikoach nefesh docha kol ha'torah kula. Of course, you makrav the balmum. Why would you? Why wouldn't you be makrav in this case? But he was worried that yomru balimum in kraven legabim mizbeach. He wasn't worried about the halacha of right now. He was worried about being mezayif the Torah, about adjusting the Torah in a way that people are going to misunderstand the Torah in future generations. People are going to think the incorrect halacha. And even though pikuach nefesh is docha kol haTorah kula, but you can't be mezayif the Torah in perpetuity, meaning you can't allow mistakes in the Torah. A lot of times, you know, people use apologetics to explain the Torah, and they're megala halacha, you know, they say over things in Torah that maybe aren't accurate portrayals, just as a way of making it sound more palatable. But you can't go against the Torah. The Torah we believe is perfect. The Torah we believe is pure, and we could be honest about what the Torah has to say. So Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas was worried over here. Why? How could we teach a halacha? People are going to think this the wrong halacha. So Savul the Mikta Leiter Lo Leiz of Aleima. So they said, okay, well, our other options, we can kill Bar Kamsa, and then we won't bring the carbon, but at least no one will be there to tell on us, so it won't be our problem. So Amar Rabbi Zecharia, Yomru Matul Mun B'Kachem Yehari. No, but it's also going to be a Ziyuf HaTorah, because then all the Kohanim that are here, everyone's going to think that if you're Matul Mun B'Kachem, that anyone who makes a Mum in Kachem is getting killed, because it deserves to get killed, because they're going to think that's why we're killing Bar Kamsa. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, and Basnuso Shal Rabbi Zecharia Ben Avkulas, very famous line, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan says that it was the anivus of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas that destroyed our Beis HaMikdash, that ruined everything, that burnt the Heichal, that caused us to be exiled from Eretz Yisrael. In what way was it his anivus that caused that to happen? So a lot of different suggestions are made. Maritz Chayis is probably the most famous one, where he asked this question, why, what's the lashon of the anivus? So he says it should have said tzidkuso or chasiduso, that he didn't want to kill the guy. So he was such a tzaddik, such a chassid, he didn't want to kill Bar Kamsa, even in this case. So even though he was right to be killed. So the Maritz Chayis explains, no, Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas didn't realize how quickly he'd be listened to. He didn't realize that this wasn't going to be a discussion anymore. And that when he says something, that's it. That's going to be the end of the discussion. Everyone's going to listen. He didn't realize how much power he has. So had he realized that, had he known, then he would have been more productive in coming up with a solution. But he shot down the solutions because he thought, okay, so then a discussion will ensue. But he didn't realize what a gadol olam he was, how everyone thought of him as the gadol. One of the achronim suggests, you know, the halacha is by Sanhedrin, they're posech min atzad, which means the way the Sanhedrin sits, it sits in such a way where the gadol is be'emtza, the gadol's in the middle, and the further you get away from the middle, the further away you get from being the gadol, meaning the smaller you are, the further away you are from the middle. So we're always paseach min atzad. We start with the smallest judge, with the least the least respected judge, to begin his to state his opinion first. Why do we do that? Because if you're paseach be'emtza, if you start with the gadol, no one else is going to say a thing. You know, the Rosh Kabahag is already paskin. What are we going to say? Not Rosh Kabahag. The Rosh HaSanhedrin is already paskin. What are you going to say? Who's going to argue on him? So that's what some of the Achronim suggest. Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas sat min atzad because he thought no one was going to listen, and therefore he was poseach. He was the first one to speak because he figured no one's going to listen anyway. But he was the gadol, so everyone was afraid to talk after him. No one wanted to say anything after him. So it's important sometimes for people to realize when they're in a position that other people are going to listen. Sometimes a person, you know, will say something or will do something, say, no one cares, no one's listening anyway. No one, you know, who pays attention to me? Why should it matter to somebody, you know, what I do? That's not going to affect them anyway. But sometimes it does. Sometimes people are looking. At the very least, sometimes their own children are looking. And it does matter. And as much as we think that, our kids aren't always looking and that they don't look up to us and that they don't look to us to figure out how to behave, it's very, very far from the truth. They do, and we have to realize our own power in that regard. Shadra alavai leNiron Kesar. So they sent a message to Niron Kesar. Kikasi shadra gir, meaning to come and attack Yerushalayim. Kikasi, when Niron Kesar came, shadra gir leMizrach. He sent the shot an arrow to the east. Asa nafal biYerushalayim, and it went and fell in Yerushalayim. LeMarav, he shot an arrow to the west. Asa nafal biYerushalayim, and again it went and fell in Yerushalayim. La'aba ruchos ha-shamayim, asanof b'Yerushalayim, and again he threw shot arrows in all the directions, and it always landed directly in Yerushalayim. So he took that as a simon that it's okay to attack Yerushalayim, because every arrow he shot, what's the imagery of an arrow? So again, sins of speech are often referred to as an arrow, because when a person shoots an arrow, you can't pull it back. Once an arrow is shot, it's going wherever it's going. There's no way you can catch up to it and pull it back. So that's the imagery of the arrow, that's when a person says Lashon Hara, so it's out there. There's no way you could undo it. You could apologize, I didn't mean it, whatever, but it's out there. It's always going to be there. And even if you didn't mean it, and even if you apologize and the guy forgives you, and the person, if you said something about somebody, the next time anyone says that same bad thing about him, you know, the next time he hears it, it's going to be twice as painful, because now he's going to think everybody believes it, because he's going to remember the time you said it also, the first person said it also. So that's the arrow. Can never ever be pulled back. So he says to the child, he goes over to a child. This used to be a common way of figuring out what the Ratzon Hashem was, or what the condition of the world in general was. So he says to the child, tell me a pasuk, what did you learn? Armalev and Asatias Nakmasi Ba'adum Biad Ami Yisrael. Amar Kutcha Bruchu Boilichruve Besa Yboilichapuri Yadiba Hugavri. He says, ooh, so it means that Hashem wants to destroy his house, and he wants to clean his hands of it with me. Meaning he wants me to be the fall guy, so that I could be the one that gets in trouble for destroying the Beis HaMikdash. So Arak va'azul v'yigayir v'nafik minei Rav Meir. So right away, so I'm not going to be that guy. Meaning he needs a villain in history. I don't want to be the villain. So he went and he was Megayir, and Rav Meir descended from him. Rav Meir descended from him. Why Dafka Rav Meir? What was the special zuchus of having Rav Meir descend from him? Some of the Achorim suggests Rav Meir's Balanes, and here's a person who just shot arrows in all different directions, and he saw a nace happen with his own eyes. And so maybe that's the idea of Dafka Rav Meir descending from him. But whatever the logic is, whatever the reason is, that Rav Meir is the one, but Rav Meir is the one that descended from him. Shadri, well, could also be Rav Meir. Meir, the word Meir itself means to give light. And the Beis HaMikdash is referred to as Oro Shalolam. It's the light of the world. So the Gemara says at the beginning of Basra that one who destroys Talmidei Chachamim is Kava Oro Shalolam. That's what it says about Hordus, that he killed Talmidei Chachamim, so he extinguished the light of the world, and his kapara, his takana, was to renovate the Beis HaMikdash. Because you renovate the Beis HaMikdash, you're bringing the light back into the world. So Shadri Levailas Pesainus Kesar, so they sent us Pesainus Kesar, Asa Tzara Latlashni, and he spent 3 years in siege of Yerushalayim, and during those 3 years, he didn't actually destroy Yerushalayim, he was just attacking Yerushalayim, and he was surrounding Yerushalayim. So there's also significance to that, that everything in the Jewish people seems to come in threes. We have three avos, there are three levels of Jews, Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, just learning about recently in Daf Yomi, we're an Am Tlisa'a, we're a nation of threes. So he had to surround us for 3 years before he was able to do anything. And in fact, Havu Bahanu Tlasa Atiri, there were three rich men in Yerushalayim at the time that were able to support the community, Nakdimon Ben Goryon, Uben Kalva Savua, Uben Tzitzis HaKeses. Those were the three rich men. Nakdimon Ben Goryon, Shenakta Lochama Bavuro. Nakdimon Ben Goryon was someone who the sons stood still for him. That's a Gemara Maseches Tainis, that he was such a chash of a person. Ben Kalva Savua, Shekala Nichlas, the Besuk Shurav Kelev, Yotik Shu Savea. Anyone, he was such a wonderful host, that anyone who would come into his house, even if they're starving like a dog, they'd go out and they'd be satiated. And Ben Tzitzis HaKeses, Shesat Tzitziso Nigreres, Algabik Sassos, that his tzitzis would drag along on cushions as he would walk. That's why he was called Tzitzis HaKeses, that it was on the Sassos that his tzitzis would drag along. When Avram writes in Shulchan Aruch that it's a little bit difficult to understand, that makes it sound like, and where was everybody else's tzitzis? They didn't have cushions to drag along on the bottom of their tzitzis, so they dragged along the ground. But the halacha is not that way. The halacha is that you're not allowed to have your tzitzis drag on the ground. When you put on your talus, if the tzitzis drag on the ground, you have too big a talus. You need to get a smaller talus. Tzitzis aren't supposed to drag on the ground. But Pashas is that his tzitzis were so big and so long that they would have dragged on the ground. That's why he had these. He must have had people running alongside of him with these cushions that they would walk with the cushions so that the tzitzis wouldn't hit the ground. But other people didn't have such big tzitzis, so their tzitzis didn't drag on the ground. But these are the three great rich men of Yerushalayim. All of them were Bali Maisim Tovim. All of them used their wealth for good things. Maral explains that the three types of brachos that are mashpia ashirus on a person. There's chesed, there's din, and there's rachamim. Kalba Savua was an ashir, obviously bezchus midas chesed. He's the one that everyone who came to his house, they got fed. So he was chesed, and that's why he's kalba Savua midas chesed. Everyone was savea from him. In fact, we're going to find that he's the one that provides eitzim, that provides the wood. Eitzim is also associated with chesed. Tzitzis hakeses was an asher mimidas hadin, because his chashivos came from midas hadin, meaning the Gemara is going to say he sat ben gedolei romi, so he was someone who was viewed by the non-Jews as being a very important person, so he relates to din. And Nakdimon ben Goryon was an asher b'midas harachamim. So that's why Naktachama Bavuro, that when he knew how to daven, the sun stayed in place for him. So that's rachamim, that's getting rachamei shemayim. Zeikadarmi. Some say that this sakesa shaysa kistum utalis ben gedolei romi, like we just referred to, that is his throne sat amongst the gedolei romi. So one of these rich guys said, "I'll support the community in Yerushalayim with wheat and barley." Another one said, "I'll support them with wine and with salt and with oil." It's unbelievable that they were still drinking wine. Meaning that was as soon as Yerushalayim was destroyed, the first thing they threw out. They said, "How could we ever drink wine again?" They didn't want to. That's why at the Suda Mafsekas, that's Meikar Adin. We're not allowed to drink wine. We're knowing the whole 9 days. But at that time, they didn't. They knew that times were tough, but they didn't know where it was going. It could have still turned around. They didn't know that. There are a lot of times in history that are very uncertain, that could go in a lot of different directions. So they weren't sure what direction it was going to go in. V'chadam alu b'tzivi. And one said, "I'll supply them with wood." V'shavchu rabban alu d'tzivi. And the Rabbanan praised the one who wanted to supply them with wood. Rav Chista kol aklide have a muscle shame bar miditzivi. Rav Chista would give all of his keys over to his shamish, to his trusted servant, except for the keys to his wood warehouse. Rav Chista akal b'dechiti bo yishisin akal b'ditzivi. That if you have one otsar of wheat, it's going to take 60 storehouses of wood in order to be able to supply the energy to do what you need to do with the one otsar of wheat, in order to supply the energy to turn that into food and make it productive. So wood is something they needed the most of. And they had enough. These were such wealthy people. They would have been able to support the entire community of Yerushalayim for 21 years. But there were these thugs, I don't know a better translation for that word, in the neighborhood. Amru lehu rabbanan nefuk v'navid shalma ba'adayim. So they Rabbanan said to these thugs, maybe we should go out and try to make shalom. Jews always look to make shalom. We always want to make shalom. We're not interested in fighting. Even the people that we're supposed to kill, we always go and make shalom first. Even the inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael, before Yeshua let us in, we had to send a letter first. If you want to make shalom with us, let us know. We're happy to make shalom. You have to get out, but we're happy to make shalom. Lo shavkinu. And they said, "No, we're not interested. We don't want to make shalom." Amrulu nefik v'navid karva b'hadayu. So they said, "Let's go." And the Bar Yuni said, "We want to fight." So Amrulu rabbanu lo mustayu milsa. Fight? What are you talking about? How can we fight? Who are we? We don't have an army. We're a bunch of talmidei chachamim and mustama accountants and lawyers. And we can't fight. Kamu kalinu lahanu ambari dechiti yusari. So how do you decide such a debate? So as long as you get rid of the other, if there are only two possibilities, and you want your possibility to be the one listened to, you destroy the other possibility. So you force their hand. So what did the Baryoni do? They burnt down all the storehouses of wheat and barley, so there were no supplies anymore. There was no food anymore. So something had to be done now. Vavakafna, there was famine. Marta bas baitus atirasa di Yerushalayim havia. Shadarta l'shlucha v'armi le'zil aisli l'smida. Marta bas baitus was from the wealthiest of Yerushalayim, and she sent her messenger to the market and said, go bring me smida, which is a very chashava type of flour, a very fine flour. Adazel is davin. So the woman went to the market, and by the time she got there, it was all sold out. Asa amala smida leka chivarti ika. She's not going to just buy something else. She doesn't know what she wants. She doesn't have a cell phone to call her. So she comes all the way back home, and she says, "Okay, the finest flour is sold out, but they have the grade B flour." So amale, they wouldn't call it grade B. The first one was grade AA, so this is, they have the grade A flour. So amale zil aisili. It's like the large eggs, not the extra large. So it's zil aisili. So go, okay, go get me the grade A flour instead of the AA. Adal zavin, she goes back to the supermarket, it's all gone. Asava amla chivarta leku gushkarika. She comes back and reports to her, but the grade B flour is still there. Okay, give me that. Adazel is davin. She goes, I don't know why the woman didn't get the idea that just buy what they have. Buy, and then you'll ask questions later. It wasn't her money, I guess. So Avasa, I don't know why Marta Basbaitis didn't tell her. Whatever they have, buy from me. Asava amrila gushkara leko kimcha desarika. Then she came back and she said, they don't have any wheat flour, they have barley flour. Barley typically was considered Michael Behema. That's why the Sota's Karban is with barley, because she's Nasis Maisa Behemas. She acted like a behemoth, so she gets her carbon is Michael Behemoth, the Gemara says. So anyway, so she says, yeah, they have barley. Amalei Zilaisli, okay, I'll eat barley. Adazel is Davin. By the time she got there, that was sold out also. Have a shlifa misana. She wasn't wearing shoes. Amra epok va'achsi imashkachna midi lemechol. She said, I have to go out myself and see if there's anything to eat. She was starving. Esib la parta bekara umesa. She stepped in some dung, some animal excrement, and the horror of that killed her. She died from that. Meaning she was a noble woman, she was used to the finest things in life, and here she was walking around barefoot, looking, scrounging for food, and she stepped in animal excrement, and that was just too much for her to take. The Gemara has a few places where you find people who are used to such fine things that whenever the going got tough, they just dropped dead because they couldn't handle it. The message is probably that we shouldn't get so used to the finest things. We shouldn't be so dependent on living lives of such fine gashmias. We should be able to subsist on, even if we couldn't afford, we should be able to subsist on less than the finest things. Kariyala Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said about her, Harachabach va'anuga asher lo nosto kaf ragla, that she was pampered. That's what he was saying. That's why she couldn't make it with her foot dirty. Igda Amri, others say, no, that's not what happened. Grogos Rabbi Tzadok Achla, v'itnisa umesa. She ate the fig of Rabbi Tzadok, the shell of the fig of Rabbi Tzadok. Figs don't have shells, but the peel, the we're going to see soon in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to tell us in the next few lines that Rabbi Tzadok used to not be able to eat the whole fig. He would just suck the juices out, and then he would discard the rest of it. So that's what she found, the discarded part of the fig that Rabbi Tzadok had sucked all the juices out of. And she ate that, and that killed her, because again, she's so used to eating things that are of much higher quality, that she eats someone's leftovers after they threw it, you know, like a beggar scrounging in the garbage. Or I remember when I was in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, there was guys in the yeshiva that was right near a restaurant, and they used to scrounge around after families would come eat, and they would eat the disgusting. But if you're used to the finer things, you drop dead. So that she dropped dead from that. There's obviously symbolism in that as well. You know, Rabbi Tzadok, we're about to see, was all about trying. Rabbi Tzadok spent all these years davening for Yerushalayim, and Rabbi Tzadok takes the pri, and he sucks out the pnimius of the pri. And the Marta Bas Baitos was all that was left for her was the chitzonius. And maybe that's the message about Yerushalayim in general, that if Yerushalayim to us is just a place with nice hotels, it's a place that has a good chitzonius, and it's good on the outside, but we lose out on the pnimius, well then it's not going to work. Yerushalayim doesn't work that way. It's all about the pnimius. It's all about the neshama of Yerushalayim. And that way, even when we don't have the chitzonius and all the history that we didn't have it, we were still able to keep Yerushalayim alive in our tefillos, in our benching, in our minds, in our hearts. Throughout all those years, we were able to keep it going, because if you take the pnimius, that's something that could last us. Rabbi Tzadik Yosef Arbayin Shnin B'Tanisa, the Lolech of Yerushalayim. Rabbi Tzadik fasted for 40 years that Yerushalayim shouldn't be destroyed. Ki hava achol midi, hava mischazi me'avroi. When he would eat something, you could see it outside of his body. That's how malnourished he was. The chava bari, maisi the grogos, and when he was healthy enough, they would bring him figs. Mayitz mayayhu, he would suck out the juices. V'shadiluhu, and then he would throw it aside, then he would throw it away. The Acharonim asked, how was he allowed to fast for 40 years? Not allowed to fast on Shabbos. Okay, but this was obviously something that he thought was an Eitz Tzara. You know, not allowed to, typically speaking, we don't say Tehillim on Shabbos, and we don't do Bakashos on Shabbos and things like that either. We don't cry on Shabbos for things. But when there's an Eitz Tzara, when there's something that's mamish happening right then, that can't wait, so then we do. If it's a prolonged type of thing, it sounds from here that for 40 years he went on doing this. When she was dying, when Marta was dying, she took out all the gold and the silver, shadise b'shuka, and threw it out in the market. And Amra, hayle maimi bayli, who wants this stuff? The message is so clear in this Gemara that so many times people could spend their whole lives chasing after the gold and the silver, chasing after, you know, that being their goal, and then ultimately, where does it get them? Ultimately, she's dying, and it doesn't do anything for her. If you don't have food, all the gold and silver in the world is not going to help you. And it was all hefker; it didn't make a difference. No one, and it was hefker, and no one even wanted it. No one even cared, because it's not something that has lasting value. Abasikra Reish Bar Yoni de Yerushalayim. Now, the head of the group of thugs in Yerushalayim was named Abasikra, and Bar Achdi Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Hava. He was the nephew of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So he said, I'd like to have a private meeting with you. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai says to his nephew, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, the hero of the post Churban era, and the Churban era, this is his first act of heroism during the Churban, but afterwards was the heroics continued, and Klal Yisrael needed guidance, and we needed to figure out what to do, and how we're going to recuperate, and how do we live life, and how what does a Jew do without a Beis HaMikdash, and without a Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is the one that Amad V'Hiskin, Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Zechel HaMikdash, Zechel HaMikdash, you have all those Mishnayos. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is the one who figured it all out for us. So he says, what are you doing? He says to his nephew, what are you doing? How long are you going to starve the inhabitants of Yerushalayim? Amalei, Mayavit. So it's amazing that the head of the thugs, he was the one that was in charge. He said, what am I supposed to do? Diaminu midi katuli. If I go off message now, and if I start telling them that they should that we should act differently, they're going to kill me. I mean, a lot of times when you have people who are just motivated by rage, and they're motivated by violence, and that's their whole way of thinking, it's not that they're following their leadership. Their leadership is there and saying all the wrong things. But if that leadership wasn't there, it would be someone else. And if that leadership ever took a peaceful tone, they'd kill them too. So Amalei Chazili Takanta L'Didi De'epuk Efshad Aviat Salaporti. He says, maybe get me out of here. You know, maybe if you can get Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, says, get me out of the city. Maybe I could do something. Maybe I'll be able to save something. Now it's interesting. This was his bar achte. This was the son of his sister, right? The Gemara says that when you marry a girl, you're supposed to look at what her brothers are like, because that's what the children are going to be like. We assume that the children are going to take after the mother's brothers, right? That's what the Gemara says. So I guess Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai thought he's got to be able to reason with him, meaning this is I'm supposed to be his hero. I'm supposed to be the one that he's modeled after. So I got to be able to, there must be a shemitz of goodness somewhere in there. Amrlei, so he said, okay, I'll give you advice. Nekot nafshech b'ktsiri. Act like a sick person. V'leisei kuli alma v'lushai lubach. And then have everyone come and check on you and visit you. B'mevakar cholim. V'aisi midi sarya v'agni gabach. And then take something really smelly, take like a dead animal or something, and put it near you so that the odor will be so pungent that people will start smelling it. V'leimru d'nach nafshech. And everyone will say, it's your decomposing body that you had died. V'la'ailu Bach Talmideich, and then at that point only let your closest Talmidim in. Velo Leil Bach Inishachrina, no one else should be allowed in to carry you out. The Lolirgishan Bach de Kalilat, because if anyone else carries you out, they're going to realize that you're too light to be alive, to be dead rather. And the Inuyadi de Chaya Kalimimisa, everyone knows that a live person is lighter than a dead person. That's what they call dead weight. Right? Dead weight is that when there's no life to it, there's no Chay Nosei Asatzmo. So the it's much, much heavier. So you need your Talmidim who are not gonna who will be in on it, and they'll know what's going on, and they to be the ones to carry out your mita. Avid Hachi, so he did that. Nichnas po Rabbi Lozer mitzad echad, Rabbi Shua mitzad achir. So Rabbi Lozer went on one side of him, Rabbi Shua on the other side. Kimatul, it's pretty impressive that the two of them alone, normally to carry, if it was a real dead body, I don't know how two people would be able to carry. Normally you need several people to carry. But anyway, Kimatul l'pischa, when they got to the entranceway of Yerushalayim, bo l'mitkere. So the guards there said, okay, what do you do to make sure somebody's dead? You stab him. That's not what you normally do to make sure somebody's dead. I don't know why they didn't just take his pulse. But they decided to stab him. Samalu yomu rabban dakru. So the Talmidim said, you know, that's not going to be good. How's that going to play in the international press? That you're going and you're mutilating the body and you're going to stab the... That's everyone's going to say that's what you're doing. You're mutilating bodies. It's like this morning after the police in Yerushalayim killed the terrorist who was attacking with the tractor and killed somebody and tried to kill more people with the tractor. So what was the story? That they, why did they shoot off a whole round at this guy? They mutilated his body, Nebuch. That's the story. So they said, okay, let's push him. We won't mutilate him, we'll just push him. Amr lahu yomru rabban dachvu. No, then they'll say, who pushes around a dead guy? That's also not so nice. So paskulei bava nafak. So they said, okay, let him go, he's probably dead anyway. So when he got on the outside, Amar Shalma Alech Malka, Shalma Alech Malka. So he said, Shalma Alech Malka. Who were these guards that they needed to get by? The guards were the Baryoni. Those were the Jews. These were the people that were side, you know, that wanted to fight, and they were so focused on their mission of violence, that they wouldn't have allowed him out to be buried. But anyway, so he finally got out to the Goyim and he said, Shalom Aleichem Melech, Shalom Aleichem Melech. Amar Lei, so the general, who was not a Melech, said to Rabbi Yochum and Zakai, Mechiaptus Trey Ketala, Yechayiv Misa twice, Chada Delav Malka, and Avakakarisa Li Malka. First of all, I'm not a Melech, and you called me a Melech. So what? So I would say, okay, so you married B'malchus, and therefore the Melech should kill you. Says Rashi, no, Delav Malka Navis Al Altpi. You're making fun of me, you're mocking me. So I should kill you for that, because you're calling me a melech, and you know and I know I'm never going to be a melech, and you're mocking me. V'sui malka ana ada ina my loasas l'gabai. And furthermore, if I am a melech, and if you really do hold I'm a melech, then where have you been? How come you haven't come to me yet? And so the Bali Musa use this Gemara, and they say, like on Rosh Hashanah, we spend the whole day calling Hashem melech, 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 right? The whole day is about being mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response to us sometimes is, if I was really a melech, where have you been the whole year? How come, if you really believe I'm the melech, then you believe I can take care of everything, then you should have reached out to me earlier. Amr Lei, Deka Amrit Lav Malka, no, Sarv Yochum, and Zagi says, the fact that you said that you're not a melech, Ivra Malkaat, it's not true, you have to be a melech. I don't know much about your politics and your whole political system and who's what, but I do know one thing, Di Lav Malkaat Lo Mimsu Yerushalayim Biyadcha. If you were not a melech, then Yerushalayim would not have been given over in your hands. That the Levanon, which refers to Yerushalayim, is only going to be given over in the hands of an Adir. An Adir means a Melech. The Levanon is the Beis HaMikdash. Shnemar Aratov Azeh Ba'Levanon. Udekamrit Imalkan Amelo Kasus Lagabai Ad HaIdna. And your other question, that if I really view you as a Melech, where have I been this whole time? Biryoni de Ispal No Shafkinan. It's these thugs that we have amongst our own people. Sometimes, our own people are the biggest traitors, and they destroy our whole community. So it's that they didn't let me. They didn't let me come out. I would have loved to come out earlier. Amalei ilu chavish al dvash v'darkon karachala lo yushovnes a chavish b'shvil darkon. Says if you had a barrel of honey and there was a snake around the barrel. So what would you do? You would break the barrel for the sake of the darkon, meaning you kill the snake and that's it. So ishtik, so he was, meaning you should break the whole wall down. So the people that are guarding the walls, that's the snake, the people that are guarding the walls, break the walls down and you should have gotten out. So ishtik, he didn't respond. He didn't say anything. Ishtik sometimes means he didn't want to respond, sometimes means he didn't have anything to say, that he didn't have a good answer. So kari alei Rav Yosef, it could be that they just weren't, They would never think in those terms to act to destroy the walls of Yerushalayim, that the Chacham should be doing such a thing. Kari alei Rav Yosef vitim Rav Akiva meishiv Chacham machar v'daitam yisachar. So Rav Yosef and Rav Akiva says about him that he didn't respond, that sometimes the Chacham take a step backwards and their minds become foolish. He should have said, no, here's what you do. If you have a snake wrapped around the barrel, you don't break the whole barrel. That's not what you do. You take you take tongs or something like that. You grab the snake with them and you pull the snake off the barrel and hopefully you could save the barrel. So they were saying, he should have said, I would have hoped that we could have saved the walls of Yerushalayim and not had to destroy the walls of Yerushalayim. But while they're having this conversation, or this non-conversation, because he was quieted by now, he had nothing to say, Asi pristika ale mi Romi. So a messenger came from Rome. Amalei, kum demisale Kesar. Get up, because Kesar is dead. V'amri hanu chashivi de Romi lusivach bereisha. And you're the new king. Sava kasayim chad mesani, ba'al demesayim l'achrina. So this general, who is now just named the king, and it showed that Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai's comment was prophetic, that he called him a king, he happened to have been wearing one shoe at the time, and he wanted to put on the other shoe. I don't know why he was wearing one shoe, but if he was changing his shoes while this conversation was going on, but he happened to have been wearing one shoe, and he wanted to put on the other shoe. It's interesting, shoes in general relate to, the imagery of a shoe is supposed to relate to gashmi. That's something that's gashmius. That's why it's not like on Tishba. Tishba, when we don't wear shoes, it's a sign of Avelus. On Yom Kippur, when we don't wear shoes, it's not midin Avelus, it's midin Malachim. That Malachim are Ruchni, and therefore they're not held down by shoes. That's why when Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the burning bush, comes to the snack, Kodesh Baruch Hu says to him, Shol na alech me al raglechi. You need to take your shoes off because the place that you're on is Admas Kodesh. When you're in Kodesh, that's why in the Harabayas, it's also to wear shoes. Shoes represent Gashmi. So it's interesting. What the imagery over here is that he has one shoe on and one shoe off, as if to say he was hovering between two worlds as he's having this conversation with this very holy person, with Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai. But he wanted to put the other shoe on. He wanted to put on his other shoe. He wanted to be totally in the world of Gashmi. And lo ayil, it didn't happen. It wouldn't go on. Then he wanted to take the other one off, lo nafak, and it wouldn't come off. Summer, my high. So he said to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, you seem like a smart guy. What's going on over here? Meaning, I guess he thought maybe Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai took a few podiatry classes or something. Summer, lo tzitzar, shmua tova asilach. No, don't worry about it. You got good news. Tchsiv, shmua tova tzidashen etzen. You should know that when you get good news, your bones become fatter. So your bones obviously grew a little bit, and therefore you can't get your shoe off your foot. Elamai takante. So what am I supposed to do now? My shoe's stuck on forever? This is great news. So lacy in the very simple etza. Find someone you don't like and have him just walk in front of you. And when you see someone you don't like, it puts you in a bad mood. So if you have that, and it's another reason why you shouldn't have people that you don't like, because every time you see them it will put a person in a bad mood, and who suffers from that? The person who's in the bad mood is the one that suffers, and his family and his friends suffer when he's in a bad mood. It's not the person who he doesn't like that suffers. But anyway, so he says, so find someone you don't like, and it'll put you in a bad mood. That it will dry up the bones. So he did that, and sure enough, he was able to get his other shoe on. If you're such a chacham, where have you been all this time? He said, I thought we went through this already. There were these baryoni around the walls of Yerushalayim. I couldn't get out. He said, yeah, but remember, I got the last word in that conversation. I told you should have burned down the whole walls of Yerushalayim, broken down the walls, and gone right out. He says, I can't continue this conversation. I got to get going. Someone else is going to come to attack Yerushalayim. I have to get out of here because I'm the king now. But because you impressed me and you're so smart and you helped me out, so I'll give you whatever wish you want. Ask me for something. So he said to him, three things that he asked for. Very interesting to look at. If you had three things you could possibly ask for, you're given the right to ask for something by the person who's about to destroy your slime or who just became the king. So he says, first thing is, so again, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is the one who's thinking in terms of, he's the one that thinks in terms of how a Jew is going to survive in Galus. He was that key figure that transitioned us into a life without a Beis HaMikdash. So these are the three requests. Tainli Yavne v'chachameha. I want Yavne v'chachameha, which means I need people learning Torah at a very high level. We believe that our survival in Galus depends on our ability to continue to learn Torah, to be committed to Torah, and to actually be Talmidei Chacham, not just have some affiliation with Torah, to be Shomer Mitzvos. That's very good also, very important obviously to be Shomer Mitzvos. But you need yeshivas. You need people who are learning Torah on a very, very high level. So I need Yavne V'Chachamah. That's the heartbeat of Klal Yisrael. It's going to be Yavne V'Chachamah. That's always going to be request number one. And we do believe a lot of times people get in these debates about, should yeshiva boys serve in the army? Should they not serve in the army? Whatever your position on which yeshiva boys should or shouldn't, or whether they should or shouldn't, we always have to remember our position is never that Torah is not that important for our security. No, that is not our position. Our position, a Torah Jew's position, is that Torah is critical. You may hold that, yes, Torah is critical, but how are you going to decide who's going to learn, who's not, and therefore everyone should serve or should do both or whatever? You may come up with some conclusion, but we have to hold that Torah is critical. So I thought it was the most amazing thing, it was the most important thing that the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael all decided not to take a Beis Manim. It's not a decision. Of course you don't take a Beis Manim. I mean, if you've been fighting for years saying, no, we're protecting Eretz Yisrael, we're protecting with our Torah. So good, so now Eretz Yisrael needs the protection. And they all stepped up and they said, okay, you're right, Eretz Yisrael needs the protection, so we're going to continue to learn. The Sheshilta de Rabban Gamliel. Second thing he says, I want the family of Rabban Gamliel. I want the Shalsheles, that Mesorah, to continue. Because a Jew could learn Torah, but if he doesn't have that Mesorah, he doesn't have that tradition, he doesn't have what to turn back to, he doesn't have previous generations to learn from, so that breaks our whole connection to Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. It breaks the whole religion. as one of the of all of the horrendous things that the Holocaust did to the Jewish people. Perhaps one of the worst is that it broke an entire generation from Minnesota. There's so many people that just had nothing to turn back to. There were children when the Holocaust started, and they didn't remember anything, and there was nothing to look back to. It was like a broken link in the chain. And so he says we need to keep the Shushiltan Rabbi Gamliel around. We need to keep that the Beis Hanasi going. The Asvasa the Masim of the Rabbi Tzaddik. And the third thing I need a doctor who could cure Rabbi Tzaddik. Why? Who is Rabbi Tzaddik? Remember, Rabbi Tzaddik was the one who spent 40 years fasting over Yerushalayim, that Yerushalayim shouldn't be destroyed. So what Rabbi Tzaddik probably represents is that passion for Yerushalayim, that love of Yerushalayim, that desire to make sure that Yerushalayim lives on in our hearts, that Yerushalayim is something that's meaningful to us, that it's not just lip service, and it's not just some abrecha we happen to mention in Shmon Esrei, but it's something that's emotional to us. It's something that's real to us. So he said, we need that. If we're ever going to get Yerushalayim back, if we're ever going to have a binyan again, then it has to be that throughout our years of galus, that we have people like Rabbi Tzaddik in our midst. We have people who represent that kind of passion. Karyalei Rabbi Yosef Yitem Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Akiva still didn't like, even though Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was so well thought out and exactly what he asked for, they said he should have done better. What he should have asked for is leave us alone, don't attack Yerushalayim. So why didn't he ask for that? He could have saved the whole place. Because he thought that if he overshoots his request, if he asks for too much, then the guy, he's not going to be willing to do it, and then he's not going to listen to anything. So you're being ridiculous in your demands. You're demanding that I not attack Yerushalayim. What are you going to have been standing out here for the last 3 years, waiting to attack Yerushalayim? I'm not going to not attack Yerushalayim. You have to ask for something reasonable, and that's unreasonable. So that's what he was afraid the reaction would be. Asvas in the Masnad of Rabbi Tzaddik Mayhi, what was the cure for Rabbi Tzaddik? Yoma Kama Ashkiyua Mayu Depari. One day they would bring him a water that had bran soaked in it. The next day they would have water that flour and bran was soaked in it. Each day it got a little thicker, something closer and closer to solid food. The next day water with some flour in it. And his stomach was able to expand little by little. And we know those stories that real lives that were lost after the Holocaust by well-meaning American soldiers coming into concentration camps and giving out Hershey bars, giving out chocolate bars to children who were starving. But it doesn't work if you've been starving for 5 years and you haven't eaten anything, and then you have a chocolate bar. So it could wreak havoc on a person's system, and it could kill them. So they knew for Rabbi Tzaddik, they couldn't just give him Hershey bars. They couldn't just give him a big fat steak. It wasn't going to work that way. You have to give him little by little, expand his stomach. Azul Shadre the Titus. So then they sent Titus. Titus was the one who ultimately destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and he was the one that was sent in place of the original general. Va'amar Zu Titus HaRasha Shechirei Fagidev Klapei Ma'ilo. Where is their God? That's a reference to Titus HaRasha, who is Mecharif HaMagadev. Titus is chutzpah. Titus is known and marked for his incredible chutzpah toward the Ribbono Shel Olam. So what did he do that showed this remarkable level of chutzpah that he had toward the Ribbono Shel Olam? Tafas zona biyado. He took a zona. V'nichnas lebeis kodesh hakodashim, and he went into the kodesh hakodashim. The kodesh hakodashim, place where only the holiest man in the world can go on only the holiest day of the year, and no one else is allowed to go. When they had to make repairs in the kodesh hakodashim, they would have to lower the workers in boxes so that their eyes shouldn't be nene from the beauty of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This was such a special place. If a Kohen wasn't worthy, Kohen Gadol wasn't worthy, the Gemara Nima says, he would drop dead in the Kodesh HaKadoshim because he wasn't worthy. And Titus takes his zona, and he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You can imagine the attitude of Klal Yisrael at the time. They must have been thinking that Titus is going to be a victim of his own hubris. He's going to think that he could go anywhere and do anything, and they were probably just waiting. We've seen how many Kohanim Gadolim die by going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and not being worthy. They probably were thinking, as soon as Titus walks in there, he's finished. Then he's done, and they probably still held out hope. but then he took a zona and he went into the Kodesh HaKadosh and nothing happened to him. The Yitzia Sefer Torah, and he took out a Sefer Torah. Va'avar aleha avera, and he slept with the zona on top of the Sefer Torah. Someone doesn't do this because they have a taiva. That's not a bal taiva. That's someone who's making a point. That's someone who wants to dafka show something. And he's going to overpower the God of the Jewish people. And he's going to show the Jewish people that they have nothing. He's going to make a mockery of everything. And a lot of these stories that we read about in these Agaritas repeated themselves over and over again in the Holocaust. What they did with Sifrei Torah, how there would be mevaza the Sifrei Torah, bullet holes in Sifrei Torah, spill blood over the Sifrei Torah of Jewish people, all sorts of horrible things. So that was in Truvas Mimamakim. One of the shailas is that they were all taken out and of the shul, and when they came back, the Sifrei Torah were all. The Germans knew. They knew that that's what you're supposed to do if you really want to get the Jews. You have to take their Sifrei Torah and be mevazeh. The Natal Sayef Gider as haProches, and then he took his sword and he stabbed the Proches. V'nasa Neis v'yadam mevatzeis v'yotze, and a miracle happened and blood started pouring out of the Proches. That's a Neis. It's amazing. Ben Yehuda points out that's what we call a Neis. A Neis normally we assume is a good thing. Oh, this is like the terrible chilul of the Beis Hamikdash, and it's a nace. But the answer is that this was a nace, and it was a good thing. Soloveitchik has a long essay where he points out that we have to realize that up until the point that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, there was a major decision going on up in Shemayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to take out his wrath on something. It was either going to be the Beis Hamikdash or it was going to be the Jewish people. Somebody was going to pay. So on the one hand, obviously the Churban HaBayis is a terrible thing. But as long as there are Jews, as long as there are people, there will be another Beis Hamikdash. And the truth is, Beis Hamikdash did nothing wrong. The Jewish people did something wrong. So really, by all rights, it should have been the Jewish people that were destroyed. It should have been the Jewish people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took his wrath out on. It was the great chesed of the Ribbono Shel Olam that he took it out on Eitzim Va'avanim. That's why Tisha B'Av in the afternoon, you know, the Gemara says in Tainis that Rabbi Yochanan says, if I was there when they were making Tisha B'Av, I would have made Tisha B'Av on the 10th day of Av. Because that's when the Beis Hamikdash really burnt. It was on the 10th day of Av that most of it burnt. So why is it taka that we don't do it on the 10th day of Av? Because the 10th day of Av had a little bit of nechama to it. The fact that the Beis HaMikdash was burning and it wasn't us that was burning, there was great nechama in that. Because that meant that there's going to be a future for the Jewish people. That meant that Klal Yisrael is going to live on. And that's why Tisha B'Av at Chatzos, things get, the character of the day changes a little bit. And it's like this strange dichotomy. Like you have this, at the same time that things are getting more intense because the Beis HaMikdash is actually burning, so things actually get more intense, but we also begin nechama a little bit. We say Nachim. Why don't we say Nachim in the morning? It's not like Anenu. When Anenu, we're afraid we're not going to be able to make it through later on in the fast, so how can we say Anenu? Maybe we're not going to be fasting later on. No, that's not what Nachim is about. Nachim is a different din. Nachim is, it's Nechama. How can you say Nechama when we still think we might die? But the Nechama begins when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. The Nechama begins when it's not Klal Yisrael that's destroyed. So this is a nes. That Dam is Mevatzis V'yotze. The Dam comes out. The imagery also Tosfos points out is to let it be known that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pained by the Churban HaBayis. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not happy about this. It's not something Hashem wants to do to us. You know, when a father punishes a child, so the child shouldn't get the impression that the father's happy to punish them. Fathers, and no normal father is happy. Who wants to punish their kids? You want to be the great dad that always, does nice things and gets them treats and whatever. But sometimes you have to punish. And it hurts. It's not good. It's not pleasant. It's not fun. But sometimes it's the right thing to do. Now, Kodesh Baruch Hu is showing that it hurts. It hurts to punish Klal Yisrael this way. So that's what Tosfos points out over here. But the Dam shows that it was kasha for Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, the amazing thing is, if you look at this from Titus's point of view, what's going through Titus's mind at this point? He stabs an inanimate object, and it starts to bleed. So if it were me, I would start to think, uh-oh, I must be really going beyond what I should be doing, because inanimate objects don't bleed, and maybe there's something going on over here, and maybe I'm doing something wrong. But he took the opposite attitude, because when a person is fixated on a goal and he thinks that he knows what he's doing, nothing's going to shake him out of it. So, Kasavar Haragas Atzmo, he thought that he, it's a Melitza, it's a Lashon Saginar, he thought he killed Hashem. Shenaymar, Shagu Tzarecha, the enemies roared Bekerev Moadecha, in the middle of our meeting place. Samu Ososam Osos. Abachanan Omer, Mi Kamocha Chasin Ka. Who is like you, the strong Hashem? Mi kamocha chasin, v'kashashat Hashemei v'niyutzu v'gidufa shalosa rasha v'shosei. How, Ribono Shalom, would you listen to that blasphemy of this Russia and not do anything about it? What the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash ultimately is the world's greatest Chilul Hashem. So Chilul Hashem, the entire concept of Golus is Chilul Hashem. The concept of Chilul Hashem is that people, Chilul Hashem doesn't mean that Hashem isn't all powerful, or that Hashem isn't that's our precursors. Chil Hashem means that we lack the ability to appreciate the Kedusha of Hashem to some extent. The less we're able to appreciate the Kedusha of Hashem, the greater there is a Chil Hashem. And if the Umos Olam look and they think that Hashem isn't there, and that Hashem is not helping, and that Hashem is not doing, and that Hashem is abandoning us, that is Chil Hashem. Because they're not able to appreciate the Kedusha of Hashem, what Hashem has to offer for Klal Yisrael. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, Mi kamocha be'ilm Hashem. Mi kamocha be'ilmim. Who is like you amongst the mute ones? Yeah, Hashem has been rendered like a mute. He's not doing anything. He's not stopping any of this. Ma asa, so what did this fellow do? What did Titus do? Not also parochas. He took the parochas vaso k'min gargusni, and he made like a sack out of it. Vehevi called Kalim Shabamigdash Vinichan Behem, and he put all the Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash inside of it. Voshivan Besvina, and he put it all on a boat, Leilich Lishtabech Biro, to go and show off in his city what he has captured, what he's taken, that he's got all the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, not the Aron, that he didn't have. The Aron was hidden underground already. Shenemar, Uvchen Reisi Risham Kavurim, Uvom. That they're going to come and they're going to, that which should be buried, and they're going to go to another place to from a makom kadosh, and they're going to go to a city about what they've done. So what does this mean? Al tikri kivurim ela kivutzim. Al tikri v'yishtachu ela v'yishtabchu. They're going to gather together. That he gathers together all the kelim and he gets praised at home for what he had done. Igadam rikivurim mamish tafilu mili de mitzman. That some say no, it means kavurim because even things that were hidden became revealed to him. So a wave of the sea came to drown his boat. So what was his reaction when a wave was going to drown his boat, was going to threaten his whole boat with his boat was going to capsize? He says, that's typical of the Jewish God. All he controls is the water. Ba Paro Tava B'mayim. Paro came to attack the Jewish people, and what did the Jewish God do? He got him with water. Ba Sisra Tava B'mayim. Sisra came, and again he got him with water with Nachal Kishon. Afu Amir Alay L'Toveni B'mayim. So he's coming to get me with water. Im Gibor Hu Yalili Abasha V'Yasi Mi Milchama. Says Titus, yeah, if their God is so strong, let's see him fight me on the dry land. Yatsa Baskel V'Amrala Rasha Ben Benosha Leisav HaRasha. Baskel finally comes out and says, this is enough already. Russia, the son of a Russia, the grandson of Esav HaRasha, Briya Kala Yeshli Ba'olami, the Yatu Shema. You want to see what I could do on dry land? I have this tiny little creature. It's called a gnat. Amai Kari La Briya Kala, why is it called a Briya Kala? The Ma'alna Islay Umafkina Lesla. It has the ability to eat, but it doesn't have the ability to excrete. So as it eats, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And you're going to see this teeny tiny little creature, what it's going to be able to do to you. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu does with Balei Gaiva. The person thinks, he's a Balei Gaiva, he thinks he's so strong, he's so big. Hashem says, I'll send you someone very tiny. You have Goliath. I'm powerful, I'm strong, I'll be able to defeat anybody. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu send? Not a warrior, a little David. A little David. It wasn't even, couldn't have, he was, when he put on the armor, it was too big on him. He was like a child wearing his father's suit jacket. You know, he couldn't even, didn't look ridiculous. Little David with a slingshot. When Paro says, I'm a god, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu send? Kinim. What are kinim? Little tiny creatures. Make his life miserable. So, Alul Yabash of Atasi Mamulchama. Yeah, come to the dry land. We'll see what you do against my net. Alul Yabash, he went to the dry land. Ba Yotush v'nichnas b'chotma. The net came and entered in through his nose. V'nakar b'mochos sheva shonim. And started to peck away at his brain for 7 years. Yom achad avakachalof ababa d'beinafcha. One day he was walking, so it was extraordinarily painful that he was having this net pecking away at his brain for 7 years. One day he's going by a blacksmith shop. Shama kolar zaptan, he hears the hammer banging in ishtik, and all of a sudden the gnat stops. Amar ika takanta, he says, oh my gosh, I found my refuah, all I need to hear is loud noise. Which most people would find annoying to hear loud noise, but when you're in such kind of pain, and that's the only thing that's going to take you out of your pain, so he was all excited. Kol yoma maisu nafcha umachu kamesa. Every day they brought a blacksmith to come bang in front of him. Lenachri yad le'abazuzay. For any non-Jewish blacksmith who would come and provide this service, he would pay him. He would pay him 4 zuz a day, which presumably is what the guy would have made in his blacksmith shop. Li Yisrael amrle, but if it was a Jewish blacksmith, he would say, Mistayecha de kachazes besanech. It should be enough for you to see your enemy suffering. So the fact that you see that, you don't need to get paid. Ad tlos nyomin avid hachi. So this worked for 30 days. Mikan ve'elach kivan de dash dash. Then after that, after 30 days, it didn't work anymore because the gnat got used to the noise and wasn't so shaken up by it anymore and continued to peck away at him. Tanya, Amar Pinchas ben Aruva, Aniya Yisi ben Gedoli Romi. Pinchas ben Aruva says, I was amongst the Gedoli Romi in the royal court in Rome, the Shemes, and when he died, Patsuas Mocha, they did an autopsy, they opened up his brain, Umatsubo Kitsipor Dror, Mishkal Shnei Slayim. And they found this bird that weighed 2 slayim, which is a significant size. It's not the size of a gnat. I mean, it had grown to a reasonable sized bird by that time. Who cares how much it weighed? Shnei slayim. I'm always reminded. The Gemara says recently we did in the Gemara Megillah. The Gemara says Mila Besela Shtika Bishnayim. That if you have a good word to say, that's worth a seller. If you're smart enough to keep quiet, that's worth 2 sellers. Sometimes that's what they explain, that Yaakov Avinu, that he made, the Gemara says that because of Shnei Slayim Milas, 2 slayim of fine linen that Yaakov gave to Yosef over his other brothers, that's what caused Gilgal Adavar V'Yardav Asenu Mitzrayim, that's what caused the Galus Mitzrayim. Who cares that it was Shnei Slayim? So that's what they suggest, that maybe Shnei Slayim Milas means Yaakov is trying to send a message to Yosef. Yosef, I know you have dreams, I know you think you're going to be great, and I know you're... And it's great, it's wonderful, you should have dreams. You don't have to say them. You don't have to say everything that goes through your mind. So he's meramis to him, shnei slayim, shtikas b'shtayim, shtikas worth shnei slayim. Sometimes people have things that they want to say, and they just feel a need to be heard. Sometimes the thoughts are okay to have his thoughts, and sometimes they're not even okay to have his thoughts, but they certainly don't need to be heard. So maybe that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message was to Titus. All of these comments, all of this Mechari from Megadif to challenge HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that way. You want to think something, but to say it like that, to speak with such chutzpah. Shtikusa yafa, you would have been better off if you stayed quiet. V'masnisa tana, kegozol ben shana mishkal shnei litrin. And there's an alternate version that says that it was way too litrin, and it was... like a gozal, like a one-year-old gozal bird. Amar Rabbi Naktin and Pivsha v'chos v'tziporna shal barzal. We have a tradition that its mouth was made out of copper, and its fingernails, its claws, were made out of iron. That's how painful it must have been on his brain. Ki avakamayis, when he died, Amar lehu l'kol yu lehu gavra. So when he was dying, he said he wanted his remains to be burned. He wanted to be cremated. This Titus HaRasha. L'vadri l'kit me'a shav yamin. And to spread his ashes over the 7 seas. To lo lishabche elo diudai luk me bedina. So lo lishkeche rather, eloka diudai luk me bedina. So that the God of the Jewish people won't be able to find him and take him to within Torah. Remarkable. Here's the guy who said, the God of the Jewish people only has power over the water. All he's ever able to do is punish people with the water. That's all he's got power over. And now by the time he's dying, he's saying, where can you put my remains that the God of the Jewish people is never going to be able to find me? In the water. Whatever fits his way of thinking at that time. It doesn't make any sense. He was the one that said that the water is the place where God is total shlita. We'll see. It didn't work out for him. Unculus bar Kolonikus bar achde de Titus have. Titus had a nephew. Unculus bar Kolonikus. Boili gire. He wanted to be Megayer. Azil aske le Titus benegida. So he raised up the spirit of Titus to have a conversation with him and see what Titus was seeing on the other side. It's always good to get a glimpse into what's happening in the Olam HaEmes and see what the Emes really is. Someone who's Megayer has been touched by a need for Emes. Someone who's thinking about being Megayer wants to connect to Emes in some way, wants to connect to Amito Shel Torah. So he's connecting to the Emes, so he wants to see what's going on in the Olam HaEmes. So Amalei, Man Chashav Bahu Alma. So he says to his uncle, who's Chashav in that world? Amalei Yisrael. Tito says the Jewish people are the most Chashav in this world. Maulid Buki Buhu. Oh, so is it a good idea? Should I be Megayer? Should I connect myself to them that way? I'll be chash in that world. Amar lei milayhu nefishin v'lo mitzvos l'kiyuminu. He said, nah, you know how hard it is to be a Jew? There's so many mitzvos. They're saying you're never going to be able to do it. From the Olam HaEmes, that's what he's saying. You're not going to be able to, you care, you're never going to be able to do it. Zil igri bahu, bahu alma. Listen, you're not going to get Olam Haba. That's already a done deal because you're never going to be able to be a Jew. You're not going to be able to withstand the temptations of violating the Averus. So if you want to at least get one world, here's what you should do. Go attack the Jewish people in this world. V'havis reisha. And it doesn't matter how low of a lowlife you are. If you make it your mission to attack the Jewish people, everyone's going to respect you and talk about you like you're a decent human being. And they're going to hold you up on a pedestal. D'chsiv hayutzareh halerosh. Those who punish and those who persecute the Jewish people automatically become rosh. Totally irrational. Makes no sense whatsoever. Kol ha'meitzer l'Yisrael, nasa rosh. Whoever persecutes the Jewish people becomes a rosh. People who the persecutors would kill those people also if they had their chance. But still, they talk about how wonderful these persecutors of the Jewish people are. So he says, Titus, one more question. What's going on with you up there or down there? He says, well, I got to paskin on myself. What happens to me? Every day they gather all my ashes together and they judge me again. And they burn me again. And they scatter me over the seven seas again. Azul aski lebilam benegida. So he says, okay, Uncle said, okay, that was one conversation. So the one conversation discouraged him from becoming a Jew, but didn't exactly paint a rosy picture if he didn't become a Jew. So he said, okay, let me speak to someone else, maybe who has some experience with this. So he decided, let's look at Bilam. Let's see what Bilam has to say. Amrle man chashav bahu alma. So again, he asks Bilam, who's the most chashav up there? Amrle Yisrael, he says, the Jewish people are the most chashav. Maulid buki buhu. Okay, can I connect to them? No, you don't be interested in the good or the peace of the Jewish people. Okay, interesting, Bilam, what's going on with you up there, down there? He says, I'm boiling in boiling semen. That's my punishment. Of all things, for Bilam, why would that be the thing? Because Bilam was the one that gave the Eitzah of Arayos to get the Jewish people to sin with Arayos. He also had an Arayos relationship with his donkey. So this was Bilam's sin. This was where Bilam's Yetzer Hara was. So that's what he had in life is what he was punished with in death. So Azul Aiske bin Negida Leposhe Yisrael. Then he says, okay, you know what? Let me talk to someone else who maybe would discourage me from being a Jew. Let me speak to the Poshe Yisrael. So he pulls up the spirits of the Poshe Yisrael, of the sinners amongst the Jewish people. Amrlei man chashav bahu alma. And he said, who's chashav in that world? So Amrlei Yisrael. Everyone reported the same thing. There was no debate about. Everyone reported that the Jewish people are the most chashav in the Olam HaEmes. So the Gemara says in Bab Basra, when one of the Amoraim was dying, he was sort of hovering between two worlds. He was hovering between this world and the next world, and his father said to him, "What did you see?" So he said, "What did I see? I saw Elyonim Lamata V'Tachtonim Lamala." He said, in the next world, the people who are highest down here are on the bottom of that world, and the people who are lowest down here are the most respected in the world to come. So Klal Yisrael is trampled all over in this world, but in the next world, Man Chashavahu Alma, there's no question, it's Yisrael. So he asked the Poshe Yisrael, Ma'ulad Bukebuhu, should I connect to them? Should I become a Jew? Amalei Tovasam Darush Ra'asam Lo Sidrosh. You should always be interested in the good of the Jewish people, not in the bad of the Jewish people. Kolonogeben Kilonogeben Vavaseino. If you touch the Jewish people, it's like touching your eyeball. It's like poking yourself in the eye. What's the imagery of poking yourself in the eye? The eye is where we bring in light. The body is able to see light. The Jewish people are the eyes of the world. That if people in the world want to see advancement in science and technology and wisdom and chachma and everything good and tikkun olam and shalom and everything that we can offer, so they'll use their eyes. They'll use the Jewish people have that to offer. The person who decides to persecute the Jewish people usually is often going backwards. He's poking himself in the eye. His own, he's not going to have the medical advancements and all the other things that and the culture and everything else that Klal Yisrael tends to offer to a society. So he's just poking his own eyes out. So he says, okay, you're a Poshe Yisrael, so what's going on with you up there? I'm boiling and boiling excrement. Sinking and boiling excrement. Why boiling excrement? So I imagine the excrement it's the waste product. That Poshe Yisrael are people who spend their whole lives, they're Jewish people, they were given a neshama, they were given the ability, it's like the old mashal of the person who goes to the island and on the island where the fish fats are the currency. And there's gold and silver all over the place, and diamonds all over the place. Poshe Yisrael, they had the opportunity for all these gems. They had the opportunity for everything, for all the beauty of Torah and mitzvos. And instead, they chose the waste products, the things that should be flushed away, the things that nobody else, that Zera Kodesh shouldn't be interested in. So they're boiling in Soro Tachas. But they say not just that. Anyone who mocks the words of the Chachamim is nidom b'tzarah v'tachas. Tochazi ma bein Poshe Yisrael v'neviyei u'masalim. So says the Gemara, take a look at the difference between the Poshe Yisrael, the lowest forms of Jews, and the neviyei u'masalim of the Avodah Zarah. Bilam and Titus, these great non-Jewish leaders, these great of the Avodah Zarah leaders. Look at the difference between them. What's the difference that we're highlighting? That the Poshe Yisrael said, of course you should connect to the Jewish people. It's not Shvar Tzayni Yid. It's great to be a Jew. Whereas the Nevi'ei Umos HaOlam, who were supposed to be so refined and so knowledgeable, and so they just didn't get it. They couldn't say that you should connect to the Jewish people. So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that Poshe Yisrael, that even the Poshe Yisrael are Malay Mitzvos Karimam. That they're full of mitzvahs like a rimon. No matter how far a Jew is from Judaism, there's a neshama inside of him, there's a pintel of yid, there's some draw to kedusha. I was reading one of the recent biographies of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zichron Levracha. So it's just his 20th yahrzeit, so three different people came out with biographies at the same time of the Rebbe. So I was reading one of the, I read two of them so far, but one of them, it said that when people used to come to the Rebbe and talk about, you know, Jews of no background, Jews who have nothing, someone from an Orthodox shul in the Upper East Side of Manhattan came to the Rebbe and said, "You should have seen it, Rebbe. You would have been so amazed. We had 180 Jews who have no Jewish background, and Yom Noroim in shul." And the Rebbe sort of ignored him or brushed him off, and he said, "No, I got to tell you, 180 Jews of no Jewish background." The Rebbe said to him, "You tell every one of those 180 Jews that they're B'nai Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, just like the rest of us are. No such thing as no Jewish background. Everyone has Jewish, every Jew has Jewish background. So the Poshe Yisrael, even the Poshe Yisrael, know what it means to be a Jew. Tanya Amar Rav Elazar, Bo Rei Kama Gadol HaKocha Shel Busha. Look at the power of Busha. Sher Yisiyah HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Bar Kamsa V'Hichrav Es Beis V'Sarif Es Heichala. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped Bar Kamsa in his awful plan. And he destroyed his own house, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's own house. He burnt his own Heichal. Because Nebuch Bar Kamsa was embarrassed. Hashem stands up for the guy who's embarrassed. So that's story number one. Right? The Gemara started by saying there are three stories. So that's story number one of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, with a little bit of a few other stories thrown in the middle. Second story, Atarnagolta Atarnagolta Chariv Tor Malka. Because of Atarnagol and Atarnagolas, a hen and a rooster, the city of Tor Malka was destroyed. Tavnihigi, their minog was in this town, was kev mafki chasan v'kalasa, mafki kamay v'tarnagol v'tarnagolasa. When a chasan and kala would be in town, they would have a tarnagol and tarnagolas. They would take him out as a simin yafa, right? Kolomar pruvu k'tarnagolim, as a way of saying that you should multiply like tarnagolim multiply. Tarnagolas lays an egg every day, so it's you should multiply a lot of potential life. Yom echad avakachol of gundu deromai. One day a band of Romans were coming by, shaklinu minayu, and they took the tarnagol and tarnagolas. Naflalayim achunu, and the Jewish people in that town attacked them. How could you take our tarnagol and tarnagolas? This is important for the wedding. Asu amrulei the kesar mar debach yudai. So the Romans went right back to the kesar and said the Jews are rebelling. Asai lahu, havabu hubar droma davakavitz mila vakatalbuhu. So the Kesar was going to attack, but there was one guy in the community that was able to jump a meal at a time and kill people. Like, he was this incredible power. Shakle Kesar letage va'osve ara. So the Kesar took his crown off of his head and put it on the ground. When he saw this guy, he knew he had no chance. So Amar, and he said, the Kesar said, Ribone di alma kule, master of the entire universe. That if it pleases you, don't give over my whole malchus in the hands of one person. This Bar Droma, this super powerful warrior who could jump a meal. Notice the difference between a person who, like Titus, who goes around saying, I've defeated their God, it's all me. Their God is nothing, he can't defeat me on dry land. So he's the one that ends up having a gnat kill him. But here's someone, he's wearing a crown on his head, and he faces HaKadosh Baruch Hu's people, and he says, you know what? I can't have the crown on my head. And he takes the crown off of his head. I'm not the real king. Or maybe, he was saying, that maybe there's a gezeira that the king of whoever attacks the Jewish people is going to get killed. I'd rather live, so I'm not the king anymore. And he gave up the crown. Achshle pume l'bar droma, but then this bar droma said something that really became his undoing. Va'amar, he said, Halo ata elokim zenachtanu v'lo seite elokim b'tzavoseinu. That Hashem, you have abandoned us, you don't come and fight for us. So when he said that, you know, to have such an accusation about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that was the end of him. So Fretli Gemara, what do you mean that was the end of him? Where did that phrase come from? That's a pasuk in Tehillim. David Nami Amar Hachi. David said that same thing, obviously. Says Gemara, no, he didn't. David Atmui Kametama. David was saying it sarcastically. Halawata Elokim Zenachtanu V'Lotzeitze Elokim B'Tzavoseinu. What, you think Hashem doesn't fight with us? You think Hashem doesn't fight for us? Of course he does. Or maybe David was saying it as, how could Hashem not fight for us? Please, Hashem, fight for us. Whereas this Bar Droma was saying, Hashem, you don't fight for us, in an accusatory tone. So all the Beis Akisei, he went to the Beis Akisei, Asa Darkona Shamte Lekrakishe V'Noch Nafshe. A snake came out of the toilet and ripped out his insides and he died. Why a snake? Again, a snake is a symbol of Lashon Hara. The snake is the symbol of one who's Hitiach Dvarim Klapei Mala, who speaks with Chutzpah HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was the first one ever to do it, to speak with Chutzpah Klapei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara tells us that the snake's approach to get Chava to sin was to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want you to eat from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra, because then you're going to be just like him. So to suggest that someone could be the equal of the Ribbono Shel Olam, he could be just like him. Amar hol v'srachash l'nisa hazimna ashevkinu. Unbelievable. This melech that was about to attack the Jewish people, that took off his crown, he said, wow, I was just saved by this great miracle, maybe I should leave them alone. So he was going to leave them alone, he wasn't going to do anything. Shavkinu vazel is dako vachlu v'shasu v'dal v'shari yadis chazi beluga de gushpanka barocha k'mila. So he left them alone, but then the Jewish people started a party and a celebration, and they lit candles, and you could hear the celebrations going from distance of a meal. Amar miyachta kachada b'yehuda, he says, whoa, wait a second, the Jews are celebrating my demise, they're mocking me. Hadar asa elayim, I'm going to attack. Amar avasi tlas mea alfi shlifi saifa ailu l'tor malka, he brought 300,000 sword-bearing warriors to Tor Malka, to this community. V'katlu ba tlasi yomei tlasa l'lusa. And for three straight days and three straight nights, they were murdering and killing people. Ubahach gisa hilule v'chagagi v'changi v'lo v'yadi hani v'hani. And the other side of town was still celebrating because they didn't know about the massacre that was going on the other side of town. So while they were celebrating, there was a massacre going on with their own brothers and sisters. They weren't even aware of it. V'lo Hashem v'locham alas kol na'os Yaakov. Ki yasa rav v'nam rav Yochanan elu shishim ribo ayaros shayu lo liyane emelech bar emelech. Yana HaMelech had 600,000 cities on Har HaMelech. Dom Rav Yudom Ravasi, Shishim Riba Yaros Hayu Yana HaMelech Har HaMelech, V'kalachas V'achas Hayu Ba'kiyot Mitzrayim. Each of these 600,000 cities had 600,000 residents in it. Chutz Mishalosh, except for three of the cities, Shayu Ben Kiflayim Kiyot Mitzrayim, that had twice as many as the Yotzi Mitzrayim, had 1.2 million residents in it. A lot of times when the Gemara exaggerates, it will use Kiyotze Mitzrayim or Keflayim Kiyotze Mitzrayim. But as we're about to see, the Gemara is about to suggest that this is not an exaggeration. And what are the three giant cities? Eluhein, Kfar Bish, Kfar Shechlayim, Kfar Dechraya. What's Kfar Bish? Why is it called Kfar Bish? Bish means like stingy. People in that town would not host anybody. They didn't want to give up their accommodations to anybody. Kavar Shechlayim, Shreisa Parnasasan, Min Shechlayim, some type of root or grass or vegetable, like a cress or something like that, that's where they earn their entire Parnasa from. Kvar Dechraya, why is it called Kvar Dechraya? Dechraya is Lashon Zachar. Amrav Yochanan, Shay Noshasein, Yoldos Zacharim, Tchilav, Yoldos Nekeva Bachrona. Their wives would give birth to boys, baby boys first, and then baby girls, Uposkos, and then they would stop, they wouldn't have any more children. One boy, one girl, and that was it. Perfect American family, right? A dog, and they weren't interested in having any more children after that. Judaism encourages lots of children. We encourage that a person, even when he gets older, should continue to try to populate the world with Jewish neshamos. These people had a male baby boy first, and then a baby girl. The Gemara says elsewhere that bas tchila simin yachal lebanim. If you have a girl, if the oldest child is a girl, that's a good simin to have children, to have a lot of children. It's a question why that's so. Why is it bas tchila simin yachal lebanim? I always thought it's because if the oldest is a girl, it's like having a second mommy around. So it'll be much easier to raise the next few children, or the children that come later on in life, if the oldest is a girl. If the oldest is a boy, he's not going to be interested in helping with any babies. So so they had a boy first, and that's why the family stopped growing. They had a boy, a girl, no, they were done. Amar Ula, L'di Chazin Le'ehu Asru, Ula says, I saw this place, V'afilu Shisun Ribosa Kani Lo Machzik. He says, that little town, you mean to tell me that they had 600,000 people? It couldn't hold 600,000 blades of grass in that town. It was so tiny. Amar Le'ehu Tztuki L'Rabbi Chanina Shukuri Mishakrisu. So Tztuki said to Rabbi Chanina, you guys are lying. You're making up these exaggerated numbers. There's no way that many people were there. Amalei Eretz Tzvi Ksiv Ba'i, says, no, you don't know about Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is called an Eretz Tzvi. Why is it called an Eretz Tzvi? In what way is it like a deer? Well, Matzvi Ze'ein Oro Machzikas Besaro, just like a deer. Its skin can't even hold in all of its flesh. It looks like it's wearing a skin that's too small on it, like it gained 30 pounds and it's still wearing the same shirts. that it's it just can't even hold in everything that it's trying. Af Eretz Yisrael b'zman sheyoshrin ala rafcha b'zman shein yoshrin ala gamda. Eretz Yisrael works that way. When people live there, it expands to accommodate everyone who lives there. When people don't live there, it's when the Jewish people don't live there, it remains desolate. It's one of the great things. The Churban that we read about, how it's Yerushalayim is a desolate. We're going to read a lot in the Kinos tomorrow that Yerushalayim is plowed over and desolate. That's a bracha. It's a bracha in the sense that Yerushalayim remained loyal to us. Eretz Yisrael remained loyal to us. All the years the Jews weren't there. Yeah, we had great British colonizers who could colonize the jungles of Africa and anywhere else on earth, and they couldn't do anything in Eretz Yisrael. There's nothing going on there. And then the Jewish people come, and 60 years later, and you have a whole modern country. Rav Menyumi bar Chilkiya, Rav Chilkiya bar Tuvia, Rav Huna bar Chia, Yasvi Gavi Adad. Rav Menyumi bar Chilkiya, Rav Chilkiya bar Tuvia, and Rav Huna bar Chia, we're all sitting together. Amri Yikat Shmile Milsa Mikfar Schanya Shal Mitzrayim Lema. If anyone knows anything about Kfar Schanya Shal Mitzrayim, come say it to me. I don't know, what kind of town was this? Were these good guys, bad guys? Tell me something about this Kfar Schanya in Egypt. So one of them says, well, one time there was an engaged couple, and they were captured by Ovdei Kochavim, and they married them off to each other. So the girl says to the guy, don't touch me, don't come near me, because I don't have a ksuba from you. The ksuba is even daraisa. Certainly, the idea that a kala below ksuba is a surah labayla, you're not allowed to be with a woman when she doesn't have a ksuba, that's certainly drabana. That's definitely only a din drabana. Whether you even need a ksuba, it might only be drabana. And she says, don't touch me because we don't have a ksuba. Velo nagaba ad yomosa. And till the day of his death, he never touched her. Ukishemes, and when he died, amralahem, she said to the other people, Sibdu lazeh, you need to give a hesped for this guy because he was an incredible tzaddik. Shepit beit biyitzro yoser mi Yosef. He overcame the Yetzer Hara more than Yosef HaTzaddik did. Dilu bi Yosef lo hava el chodo shaita, v'hai kol yoma v'yoma. But Yosef HaTzaddik, Eishes Potiphar, was after him for a moment. This guy, every single day, I was right there with him. And he managed to overcome the Yetzer Hara. V'ilu Yosef, lav b'chadamita, v'hai b'chadamita. Yosef didn't sleep in the same bed as Yeshus Potiphar. This guy had to sleep in the same bed as me, and he didn't touch me. V'ilu Yosef lav ishto, v'hai ishto. Yosef didn't like Yeshus Potiphar. She wasn't his wife. This guy loved me. He wanted to marry me, but we just didn't have a ksuba. Question, the Achronim asked a number of questions on this. That, first of all, Yosef wasn't called Yom of Yoma? Wasn't... The Gemara and so the Darshans that the pasuk says that she went after him every single day. What could this mean? That she went after she had a limited amount of time when her husband wasn't home every single day, where she was able to, you know, go after him during those minutes of the day. But this was all day long, and that's the maila. So in that sense, it was. But the bigger kasha, I think, is she's saying that he's a greater tzaddik than Yosef because he was able to overcome. There's a huge difference. The woman was after Yosef. Eishes Potiphar wanted Yosef. She was helping him. She was saying, get away from me. I don't want you to touch me. So that's a very, very big difference. But on some level, he was considered to be greater than Yosef, that he didn't touch him. This reminds me a little bit of Binyamin Pam's father told me his story. Rabbi Aaron Pam told me that Rav Moshe, when he lived in Russia, Rav Moshe had four children. He had two daughters and two sons. So Rabbi Tzintender, I think, was the oldest. And then Rabbi Tzintshiskal, and then Rav Dovin, and then Rav Ruben. I think there's like a five-year age gap between Rabbi Tzintshiskal and Rav Dovin. David, of David and Reuven, and the story goes. I always heard the story that there was no mikveh in Russia at the time, and his wife couldn't go to the mikveh, so he didn't have any children. Those 5 years, he couldn't get to a mikveh. So Rabbi Pam told me that's not this. He said he heard the story differently. that they had a secret mitzvah, but if the Russian authorities would find out about the mitzvah, they'd immediately close it down. So they had a secret mitzvah that the Jewish women were able to use. But Rav Moshe Cheshbon the following said, if the Hamonam continues to have children, so the Russian authorities are going to assume, okay, the Hamonam wasn't able to withstand the Yetzer Hara. But if the rabbi has children, then they're going to know that there's a mikvah somewhere. They're going to know that they have to look for the mikvah. And then they're going to shut it down and no one's going to be able to use it. So Rav Moshe's wife didn't go to the mikvah for 5 years because she took one for the team. So that the rest of the community would be able to have a mikvah. It's kinds of tzidkus that's hard to imagine. You know, it's easy to say in a Beis Medrash. When you're in the Beis Medrash, the Yetzer Hara for Arayos and the Yetzer Hara for these kinds of things is not so strong. But when you're actually Lamaisa, you know, in this situation, the Yetzer Hara is overwhelming. And years people go fighting that Yetzer Hara. How quickly people fall nowadays to such a Yetzer Hara. They don't last 5 minutes with such a Yetzer Hara. People want years. Is it possible to live in the age of the internet and, you know, overcome this Yetzer Hara? Yes, of course it is. Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't give us the Yetzer Hara that we can't overcome. You have to be smart about it, but there's no Yetzer Hara that a person can't overcome. Pasach Yidach Ba'amar. Another one said, no, you want to know about this town in Mitzrayim? I'll tell you. Ma'isav Amdu Arbaim Modios Bedinar. One time, 40 Modios cost a dinar. That's how much that was the price. Nechzar Ashar Modia Achas. And then all of a sudden the price changed, and you could only get 39 for a dinar. Ubatku umatsu avu b'no, and they went to see, why is Hashem punishing them, that the price has changed, that things are more expensive, and they found an avu b'no, a father and a son, shabo al naram rasa b'yom ha-kippurim, that slept with a naram rasa on Yom Kippur. V'evim l'beizdin u'skolim, so they brought him to Beizdin and they stoned him. V'chaz rashar l'mukamun, as soon as they took care of that injustice, you know, they brought these people to justice, so the price went back to what it was before. Another one said, one guy wanted to divorce his wife. And her ksuba was very, very expensive. So ma'asa, what did he do? He took, he took his good friends. He said, ah, let's have a party. And he gave them to eat, and he gave them to drink, and he got them good and drunk. And he put his friend on a bed with his wife. Vehevi lovan beitza, and he took the white of an egg, vehitel benen, and put it in between them to make it look like it was shikva zera, to make it look like this friend slept with the wife, so that the wife will have been accused of cheating on him and destroying the marriage, and if the wife is the one that destroyed the marriage, she's not entitled to her ksuba. Vehemedla and Adam, and then he brought Adam into the room and said, look, you see, they're lying in the same bed, and there's the shikva zera. Ubal the bezin, and they went to bezin. There was a certain Zakin from the Talmidim of Shammai Zakin, Baba ben Buta Shemo, and his name was Baba ben Buta. Amar Lan, he said, Kach mukublani mi Shammai Zakin, he says, I have a Kabbalah from Shammai Zakin, Lovin beits a solid minaor, Vishikhva zera docha minaor, that the white of an egg will contract by fire, and the Shikhva zera will expand. Batku matzu kedvarav, and they went and they checked and they saw that it was loven beitza, that it was not shechva zera. Veviu bezin vilku, and they gave this guy malchus and bezin for trying to be motzi shemer on his wife. Vegvu ksubasa mimenu, and he ended up having to pay the ksuba. Amle abay l'Rav Yosef, v'machu David tzedikim kolayhayim, my time yonush. Wow, sounds like a pretty impressive town. All three stories of this town were about pretty impressive people. So why were they punished? So I would have said, well, they lived in Mitzrayim. Tzinisa Daraisa, they lived in Mitzrayim. No? But no, that's not what he said. Amalei, Mishum Deloi Aval al Yerushalayim. It's because they weren't Misabal in Yerushalayim. Dichsiv, Simchus Yerushalayim, Vigilu Ba Kol Ha'avea, Sisu Atzva Masus Kol Misablim Aleha. That it's our responsibility when we're in Galus to be Misabal al Yerushalayim. And as Chazal tell us, anyone who's Misabal Yerushalayim properly is Zochav Rab Simchasa. One of my kids was saying, I hate Tisha B'Av. I don't think you're supposed to like it, but why is it that you hate Tisha B'Av? I can't stand seeing adults get so emotional. I don't like that my father's sad the whole day. Adrabba, if that's his experience of Tisha B'Av, that he sees adults so emotional, that's a very, very good sign for the Jewish people. Our kids are growing up seeing that Tisha B'Av is a day where adults are sad, where adults are crying, where adults who don't normally cry. I cry easily, but other people don't cry so easily. And they're crying on Tisha B'Av, and they're being misabel in Yerushalayim. That's a very, very good sign for the Jewish people, because that's going to be the guarantee that that same emotion that we're expressing now, to an even greater degree, is going to turn into a positive emotion that we'll be able to celebrate ultimately in Yerushalayim. I think I'm going to stop there. Third story, some other time.